WGBE and 107.7 FM W299CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Tornadoes possible tonight in Oklahoma and Kansas. Seeing inflows or storms in Bison, Oklahoma. KOCO-TV forecaster Michael Armstrong.
Whoa, oh man. This has got some major, major inflow moving right in over Bison. That is extreme wind.
The U.S. Army confirming Staff Sergeant Gordon Black is being detained in Russia on charges of criminal misconduct. Mideast update, ABC's Marcus Moore in Tel Aviv.
Israel launching dozens of airstrikes and approving plans for a ground attack on the southern Gazan city of Rafah, just hours after Hamas announced new terms of a ceasefire proposal that they're willing to accept.
Israel warning 100,000 Palestinians in eastern Rafah to evacuate immediately, warning soldiers will operate with, quote, extreme force.
Boeing postponing its first launch of the Starliner spacecraft with a crew to the International Space Station, a leaky valve. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The election leader in Wisconsin's largest city is out 6 months before the presidential election. Mayor Cavalier Johnson says he's replacing Election Commission Director Claire Woodall with her deputy, Paulina Gutierrez. Milwaukee has had its share of scrutiny in a swing state like Wisconsin, where four of the last six presidential elections have been decided by less than a percentage point. A collection of art by inmates of Wisconsin state prisons is on view at the Neville Public Museum in Green Bay. Curator Deborah Bremer says people are surprised by the quality of the art, but that she also understands.
It's about hardship, it's about crimes, it's about victims.
Art Against the Odds is on display through Sunday the 19th. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
As a network, we're called Civic Media because a big part of it is we want to start modeling how civic discourse really should happen and being respectful of each other's opinions, even if you disagree, you know, like they should be given a platform.
If Rocker and I can get along, right. We can all get along.
I know,
along.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Rocker?
Yeah, that's right, Jimmy.
Well, you do have a wall in between the two of you, so
glass.
It's like the
it's only glass.
It's only
tear down the walls. Listen to Max Inc. Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Oh, surprise, surprise, another Republican politician caught up in a lie. Or another politician. Kristi Noem back in the news again. As if, you know, shooting her dog in the face wasn't bad enough for the new book. And look, they always say you need new publicity. You need something, a hook to get people to buy your book. Well, redaction. Hurry up and get the first edition, because evidently they're going to be taking out some of the lies, the half-truths, the obfuscations, the stuff that probably made the book worth reading, but weren't, well, true. Because we find out that the story about staring down Kim Jong-un, it didn't happen. And it's one of those things where you go, did she lie and think, you know, nobody was going to read the book anyway, so she'd get away with it? Did she meet an Asian at the airport and go, hey, that looks like Kim Jong-un, and give him the stare down? Or more likely, you know, did she not even read what her ghostwriter wrote? And that's probably it. Or did she and didn't care? And the thing that gets me is, you know, this is what we've come to expect from politicians. This is what we've come to expect, especially from Republicans. In the Trump era, what this generation of Republicans, who used to be the law and order crowd, who used to be the honesty people, personal responsibility folk, now it's the spaghetti theory. Throw a bunch of you-know-what against the walls and hope nobody pays attention, after you have to go, well, that wasn't really true. I guess it's the world we're in. I guess we're inundated with so much that, you know, that idea of no, you know, there's no such thing as bad press. We'll see. This may endure her to Donald Trump. This may be her key into being the VP choice, since there's no low. There's no low. And I look at this and I go, it's us. You know, it's what we've come to expect. It's what we've rewarded over the years. So am I surprised? No. And look, I blame our news media for a lot of this because, hey, we feed into it. You know, I was reading this interview over at Semaphore, and they were talking to the executive editor of the New York Times, is Joe Kahn. And in it, he says, look, you know, don't blame us. You know, we're just giving the people what they want. You know, we're not talking about saving democracy or high-minded stuff. You know, people just, they want what they hear. They want what they want. You know, the old Kink song, you know, give the people what they want. And I don't know that I agree with that when you're talking about the news media, with our news meter. Because, I don't know, should editors use polling to give people what they want? Or should they be giving us what we need, information about, you know, what's going on? You know, like an all-out frontal assault on democracy. Should we have a media culture that informs us of what's going on instead of just what seems popular, what the pollsters who rig these polls to get the responses that they want feed them? And I've always said about our corporate-controlled mainstream media, they're going to bend to the moneyed interests because that's who pays their salaries, and they're going to bend toward, well, not having to do much work. Because there are few of them, they're overworked, underpaid, and if you make it easy for them by going, hey, there's a poll, we're going to give people what they want and reinforce the narrative already out there. So am I surprised? No, not at all. Am I surprised our media doesn't give us what we need? No, because it's a for-profit industry. And, you know, you look at the fact that, you know, right now inflation and immigration are the two issues that they're focused on. Because again, the narrative from the right is, you know, we've never seen such inflation. And, you know, these protests on college campuses, we've never seen such a thing. And you go, yeah, it was your grandparents and parents' generation who saw all that. We've got people alive who remember much worse things on college campuses and much worse inflation. I had someone the other day tell me, we have never had higher mortgage rates than we have right now. Really? I actually know someone. You know, they're still alive. Their mortgage rates were upwards of 18% back in the late 70s, which is a bit higher than where we are now. But it's this sensationalism that we get from our media structure. It's the clickbaiting that we need. You know, I happened to be reading a story about a kid in Minneapolis, worked at a Dairy Queen, 20-year-old kid, you know, assistant manager of this Dairy Queen. He sees a blind guy drop a $20 bill on the ground. Sees a woman pick it up, stuff it in her purse. He says, look, give it back or we're not going to serve you. And ultimately threw the woman out. And I got to tell you, as I was reading through the story, my mind kept going to the place where I fear it's going to go. You know, that he's going to get fired for doing what all of us think is the right thing, telling this woman to hit the bricks. But no, this story was better. This story said, look, the kid reached into his pocket, gave the blind person, you know, the 20 bucks and made them whole. Took it on himself to be a decent person. I know that's not what we, the people, want to hear, but those are stories we need. We need to reward. But instead, you get little snots like the kid at Ole Miss who was making monkey noises at a black woman during a recent protest, and how, you know, how he got thrown out of his fraternity. And that's justice. No, it's not justice. I guarantee every one of those kids in that fraternity were doing the same thing. When I was a kid, that would have happened. there would have been repercussion. Somebody would have popped him right between the eyes. But we don't do much of that anymore. We don't hold people accountable. And that's a problem with our media as well as with us. You know what I'd like to hear from my media? I'd like to hear that we're going after the corporate criminals who are robbing us blind. I'd like to hear how workers are getting screwed in the workplace. I would like to know how we save our democracy. But instead, what we're told is we're just giving the people what they want. And evidently what we want is a steady diet of people behaving horribly and of division and things that make us angry and pitted against each other. Maybe, evidently that is what we're looking for. Not information on how we salvage democracy, how we hand off a country better to our children than we found. So I got to tell you, I'm a little frustrated with our news media, but not surprised. There is a for-profit motive, and it runs right through the people who pay their paychecks. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, Will Bunch is going to be here to share some thoughts on the assaults on protests. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So recently, EU investigators raided Dutch and Polish offices of security scanner maker Nuketech, a case reportedly that hinges on China's massive subsidies to their firms, which undercut European companies. So the question becomes, is this a move that is the beginning of the EU finally standing up to itself, for itself against mercantilist China and the trade practices? Or is this just a show? And here to share some thoughts on where this is and maybe how it affects us, I've asked our friend Emily De La Bruyere to come talk with us. She's the co-founder of Horizon Advisory, their website, horizonadvisory.org. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
It's awesome to be here. Thank you.
So is this rating, is this something we should be paying attention to? Because I know there's been a lot of lip service over the years coming out of the EU. We got to stand up to China. We can't keep them letting them steamroller over us. Is this a big deal or not?
There's this constant up and down in Europe's response to China, which is the ultimate ping pong game. And the problem is right now, there are just also so many indicators of Europe trying to play nice with China. And it's tough because they know that what Beijing is doing is wrong and is against their interests, at least trade-wise. And Europe like gets trade policy better actually than the US does, but they're not willing to do anything assertive about it. So you'll get these raids, but at the same time, every major European leader is out there meeting with Xi Jinping.
Yeah, and look, because people want the cheap stuff. I mean, ultimately, it's that drug that we've been, for a couple of decades now hooked on. We want cheap stuff. It's the Walmart, cheap stuff through better living through cheap stuff. And you go, no, it's actually worse living because, we don't have jobs.
Yeah, they want cheap stuff. And especially in Europe's case, they want the Chinese market. Like every major European company out there, like the Airbuses of the world, they want to sell into China, and they're they have strong relations and a lot of influence over their national governments. And so they're out there saying, hey, no, we got to play nice. Let's have close ties. And the combination of those two things, like the economic benefit of goods from China and this push for the Chinese market, even for companies that are never going to get the Chinese market, because right, that's going to, that's enough to keep Europe playing ball.
No, this is, you know, look, I've been arguing this for years, because as you were talking about access to Chinese markets, I remember GM built like a $2 billion production facility there in hopes that they would be able to sell those vehicles there. And sadly, a lot of those came back here, you know, early 2000s. And I remember knowing, you know, talking to GM workers who at the time were fighting against this because they knew we're not getting access to that market. And if we do, there aren't a lot of people who are going to be able to buy the products that we make. So it seems like kind of a fool's errand.
Yes. And it's happened time and time again. And the story is always that an international company goes in and maybe they get to sell into the Chinese market for some period of time, but they had to go in partnership with a Chinese company. Oh, wait, now that Chinese company has the same capabilities, the same product as the international one, and the international company is forced out. And then not only do they lose the Chinese market because of that, but the new Chinese champion with state subsidies and having cheaply acquired whatever crown jewel technology the foreign company had goes out and captures its global market.
Yeah, or captures the company entirely and grabs that name. I mean, you know, as consumers, you know, I've heard this argument thousands of times. Well, I just want to have the choice. We should give American consumers the choice of buying a Chinese product who that's a little bit cheaper, an American-made product is a little bit more. But in most cases, I don't have that choice because there aren't that competition seems to already have been killed off in a lot of industries.
Yeah, because that's an idea of free, fair competition that China doesn't want. And so if one side is looking for that, which is effectively cooperation, and the other side is looking just to, as you said, steamroll, then, oh, wait, we're going to end up with only the Chinese good.
Now, you know, the argument that, you know, people have made, well, we need this for diplomacy. We're going to undo all of these years of working together. And I'm going, I don't think we were working together. I think we were getting taken. I think we were getting taken to the cleaners.
Yeah, we weren't working together. And also, we haven't been reaping the benefits of a free trade system. That's the other line I get. Oh, wait, if we compete with China now, that's going to be super inflationist. It's going to bring about all this protectionism. And we're going to do away with all the economic rewards of decades of free trade. It's like, no, what are you thinking? There hasn't been free trade. It's been China distorting markets this whole time. And any benefit we've gotten has been artificial and short term, and we're losing.
Artificial and short-term. Short-term being the key to this. Because, yeah, we got a lot of cheap stuff early on. I don't know if you've noticed. I hear people complaining all over the place of how things aren't cheap anymore.
Yeah, and also, the cost of a good, its price is relative to how much resources the person buying it has. And our resources as a population, as a country, are going down the more China takes our jobs and our productive capacity and our potential for economic growth. So even if Beijing is giving us cheap goods, we're paying for those out of a total pie or a total budget or a wallet that's shrinking because of what China's doing.
You know, I hear what you're saying, and I know there are people out there going, well, that's protectionism. And I say all the time, yeah, I'm a protectionist. When I leave my house, I lock the door. I'm not an isolationist. I don't have a giant moat around my house. So I think we should be protecting ourselves against people who are going to cheat, against people who are going to manipulate the market in a way that benefits them and harms us. But what do you say to the person who goes, well, you know, or what do you say to my argument? If we're dumb enough to let them do it, they're dumb enough to do it.
Let's stop letting them do it.
Exactly. When all of the intellectual property theft was going on, the line that I had for years, because we haven't heard a lot about that over the last couple of years, but it was hot and heavy for a while, about 10 years ago. Oh, intellectual property theft. You know, they're stealing all this stuff. That was the thing. And I would go, so you went there. If U.S. corporations are dumb enough to go there, give a majority of their control of their interest to a Chinese company and then get ripped off, that's their problem. They did this. There's a country that protects your property rights, and you left it.
Yeah, and at the same time, we need companies because we need to be making things. We need to have an economy. And, you know, so like American companies sold us out 100%. But at the same time, we need industry.
Right. I agree.
And like, I'll take Prodigal Son, like I'll take them back if they can figure this out and be on the right side. 100%, no problem. But they need to figure it out. And it's just crazy too, because you have so many companies that have started saying the right thing. And it's a question I get all the time is, okay, but like Apple is talking about how they need a secure supply chain and they're moving out of China. So isn't like Main Street USA moving in the right direction? But then if you actually look at their resource allocations, they're still investing in China.
Yeah. Or in their stockholders. I mean, I don't know if you saw the Apple story. What is it? $110 billion in stock buybacks are going to happen in addition to the $100 billion they took 2018? So again, money where your mouth is. They're putting it into rich people's pockets and not into the products that they're talking about. I agree with you.
And then, of course, there's the Europe question, too, which is, like, if we're bad, the U.S. is still farther ahead on all of these things than our allies are. And that's the striking thing, is every time it's like we haven't done enough or our companies haven't done enough, odds are that European or other allied countries and companies have done even less.
And is a part of that because the EU and you know, and China have done a whole bunch of infrastructure things together? There's this, what would they call it? The Belt and Rust plan that they have?
Belt and Road, yeah.
Yeah, the Belt and Road.
I like Belt and Rust. I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah, no, I mean, the idea that they're buying, you know, that they're basically buying their way in and then controlling all of that. It's like an invasive species that gets a hold of one of your trees. Like I got out back, it just kills it.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. And China's, you know, sees the opportunity, especially of European, the reality that European economies are less strong, right? And so China's come in and said, okay, we're here for you. We'll help you out. There's also the fact that Europe resents the U.S. And I feel like this is a truth that just like hasn't been fully absorbed by at least U.S. policymakers who are like, those are our strongest allies. Europe really resents America. And they resent the whole, you know, unipolar U.S. system that Europe has played junior partner to the U.S. and the world. And they've felt controlled and like they've had their autonomy undermined over the past decades. And of course, there's a lot going on there. Like the U.S. has provided its allies with a lot, and that should be accounted for too. But China's really taken advantage of that and said, okay, Europe, you resent the U.S., we're an alternative.
Yeah.
And we're part of a multipolar world order, which is what you want too. We can all be friends.
Yeah, it's the thing I talked about during the Trump years, as Trump moved away from the international community and supporting allies in, you know, other regions of the world, China was more than happy to step in with investments. And in 2010, when everyone's screaming about we shouldn't be giving foreign aid, China was more than happy to fill in those voids.
Yeah, and China's really good at seizing on and manipulating any resentment or tension or friction between the U.S. and either its partners internationally or even its population.
But, you know, looking at this and that the EU did this and that there's real serious talk of pushing back, do you see a possibility where maybe some of those resentments with the U.S., you know, are tapped down, or maybe the globe finally wakes up and goes, this isn't what we signed up for? We signed up for, I think the motto that they're using is, you know, something like competition and not dumping or something like that. You know, do you think this pulls us together at all?
I mean, the trend lines are definitely there. Like the narrative coming out of Europe now is so different and so much better on China than 5 years ago. Like they realize that Beijing is not a good actor. The problem is the same way it is for us domestically. It's fits and starts. You see one sign of progress like this raid on nuke tech, but then I promise you when Xi Jinping goes to France in a couple months, they're going to sign a host of economic agreements. And like you had Italy, they pulled out of the Belt and Road, but now Italy's leadership, Belt and Rust, sorry, I should correct myself. I love that. But now Italy's leadership is like, oh, actually we want to be friends with China. We're going there this summer. Like it's the two steps forward or the one step forward situation. So the trend line is there and they're waking up, but there's not that much time to get it right.
Now, is this at a leadership level, or do you think when it filters down to people, they get it? You know, I talk to people all the time, and their sense is, we want U.S. manufacturing. We want to build things here. We don't want, you know, China coming in and taking over things. But I look at this TikTok thing, and I'm kind of just, I don't know that we get it as a society as much as I would like to. I'd like to believe.
I think that on the Europe front, there is a messaging problem on the U.S. end, where both people and leaders in Europe, even if they recognize China's threat, they don't. They think that there's a difference between the threat China poses to them and the threat China poses to the U.S. And so they stop short of a certain point because they say, that's America's problem. We don't care about the great power competition. We just care about, you know, trade rules or human rights or whatever. And they don't realize that, like, in China's front, you can't disentangle those. And the threat is all there. So I think that's a big problem. And part of that, and a lot of the Europe question, is on the U.S. to be better at messaging and leveraging our influence and leveraging our power to bring our allies to where they have to be.
Have we done any? Look, I know Trump, you know, put the trade barriers up, some tariffs. Didn't have much of a follow up game to that, and I know Biden has kept those. Are we, in your estimation, you know, doing what you do? Are we moving in a better direction? Clearly, there's always more that can and should be done, but are we at least moving in a better direction?
Sure. Yes, sure. Maybe, but it's so slow, right? It doesn't keep up. The problem is it doesn't keep up with China's power.
Right. No, but here's the thing. If you were to wave a magic wand and go, we're going to fix all this stuff, wouldn't it cause, you know, massive disruptions? I mean, if you're the leaders of these countries, you got to know when prices go up, people are going to lose their mind. You know, kind of look around at prices have gone up. People are losing their minds. Only they're looking at the wrong people in most parts, but it's going to cause some kind of disruption. And I don't think leaders are really leaders and want that.
Exactly. Because also they're probably going to lose their elections. And it's a sad situation, but I don't think today's slate of leaders is able to say our election is less important than the future of our country.
That speaks volumes to where we are. But, you know, I know someone will say, well, you know, have we ever had those kind of leaders? And I'm sure we have. But with today's social media and the kind of instant propaganda that we see coming out of, oh, I don't know, something like TikTok, I see the forces being a little bit greater than they've ever been.
Exactly. And there isn't the cushion, right? Like, you used to be able to do something and then there was at least some time or some time to message it or for the effects to show. And now it's right there. And not only is it immediately there for the population to seize on, but it's also immediately there for the U.S. adversary to seize on, as you pointed out with TikTok. But at a certain point, the leader has to decide that they don't care and they're still going to do the right thing and they're going to step up. And honestly, maybe the American population is going to respect that. Because that's what a leader should do.
No, and the hope is that they do it before it's too late. Because it's not too late. I mean, as I've been looking at some stuff, we've been trending somewhat downward on the amount of stuff that comes in from China, just not at a pace I think that really is fast enough or that's going to help us long term.
Yeah, and the problem with those numbers too is in many cases that they miss that China's sending goods to the U.S. through other parties. Like, what's the China-Mexico trade and then Mexico-U.S. trade? And how have those volumes changed when it looks like China's going down?
No, that's an excellent point. But, you know, as we're looking at new technologies, as we're looking at, you know, automobile production and, you know, wind turbines and all this stuff, I keep saying I'd like us to be at the front of that. I'd like those to be the jobs my children and grandchildren get instead of losing those entire industries, as sadly we have done over the past 20, 30 years, to where every advancement forward seems to be those jobs being outsourced and our billionaire class reaping the benefits.
And that is where there's an optimistic story. There's a whole new industrial revolution happening. So we do have the chance to kind of, it's not even catch up, but like to start fresh in, for example, new energy industries. The issue is that right now China controls those entire industries.
Thanks for making me happier. So last question I've got for you. What should people do? What should I do? What should we be doing? Obviously, this is a messaging thing. Obviously, this is a political issue because bad policies and bad ideas got us here. How do we get out of it?
Well, it's partly our consumption, right? Like, we have a voice with what we buy and what we use. And buying things made in America and actually made in America is a part of it. But also, like, it's an election year. And making this the number one issue or a number one issue, that goes a long way. Because every politician currently running for election should think that they have to have a good track record on China if they're going to get reelected.
Yeah. No, if we can get more Sherrod Browns, I'd be thrilled with that. More Bob Casey's, I'd be thrilled with that. But Emily, I appreciate the thoughts and the time. As always, great stuff.
Thank you. Great chatting.
Our good friend Emily de la Bruyere. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Also, make sure you check out her website at horizonadvisory.org. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Some showers, even some rumbles of thunder moving in during the overnight. By sunrise, we will be in the mid-50s, increasing clouds and gusty southeast winds. Showers and storms for your Tuesday, still on the breezy side, highs in the lower 70s. Right now, it's 64.
The Todd Alba Show.
Terry Barr, host of Slice of Wisconsin here on Civic Media. Mr. Zommers, what is that called?
My Wife is Drunk by Terry's favorite, Alvin Stasinski.
There you go.
Yeah, it's so funny to listen to a polka because you think, where did that song come from?
Right? We actually had one person text during the break there said, how about the Meadow Muffin Polka?
Todd, let's quickly write that and make it.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we're seeing a lot of news about voucher programs, these voucher schemes across the country. I know in my state of Pennsylvania, hotly contested, lots of money, lots of billionaire money going into making sure that these golden tickets are available generally for the people who are already sending their kids to private schools. Kind of nice little windfall, a little Christmas bonus, if you will. But, you know, what are these things? Why are they? And are there some people who are trying to take advantage of it? And I'm looking at this thing in Iowa. Iowa just passed a voucher scheme, and one of their state representatives, weeks after the bill passes, he goes and starts up a private Christian school. And here to share some thoughts on maybe on this and why, and is this legal? I've asked our good friend, Iowa State Representative J.D. Schulten, to come talk with us. J.D., thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Rick.
So I'm looking at this state representative. His name's Dean Fisher, Republican from Montour, I guess, county there. They're starting up this Tama Toledo Christian school, and he's admitted, look, the only way it's going to run is we're getting state money. Is this legal?
Apparently it is. The voucher system, the whole thing is a scam. You know, I was at a... I'm trained for baseball. I go to my local public high school to use their facility, and they had a tennis match with the local private school. And here, I mean, no fault to like one of the tennis players for the private school. She leaves. I noticed the student leaving in probably like a $40,000-$50,000 car. And the only thing that popped up in my head right away was, well, first it was that super nice car. I couldn't even probably afford it. And then the second thing that popped in my head, oh, I bet you they're eligible for this voucher program. And they don't seem to need it. And so it's just, the whole thing is just a mess. And we're already $20 to $30 million over budget in year one. And we're expected to be 400% over budget in just a few years. And there's no auditing. There's no mandatory reporting to see where this money is going to make sure that it's being used properly or anything like that. And there's no cap. So this is a blank check to a third-party out-of-state corporation to manage private schools right now. And it's taxpayer money. And then you got this guy trying to make a dime, creating his own private school. And it's just, meanwhile, in his very county, in the same area where that he represents, there's the school district is $1 million underwater, and they're having to share staff with their district next to them, like so many rural districts, because they're struggling with attendance.
See, this is one of those things that I think is a rural, really, for Democrats to go into rural communities and talk about, they're destroying your local public schools. They're destroying that thing that brings communities together on Friday nights and brings them together of having some shared community. This sounds like a winning issue for Democrats to get involved in.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the other part of it too is you look at the state of Iowa, our state quarter says foundation in education. We used to be so proud and prideful of our education. When I graduated high school, we were first in the nation in education. And there's one year we dropped below Minnesota and everybody freaked out. And we all was like, okay, what do we got to do to go back to number one? And now we're middle of the pack at best. We are underfunding public education now that we have a Republican trifecta for over a decade now. And it just goes to show that when the voucher program passed last year, my school district, the Sioux City School District, said it's going to be an 8% budget cut directly to us because of this. So we are paying for rich kids to go, and it's not all rich kids, but it's two-thirds of the I think the article mentioned, two-thirds of the kids who are going to use these vouchers were already going to private schools. So right. It's not like all these new kids are jumping on board. And so when you have this, who does it hurt? It hurts public schools. It hurts kids with needs, special needs kids, because private schools don't have to accept them, and they can kick anybody out when they want. And that was one thing we heard in the debate for this, is there is one school that bragged about having 100% graduation rate. Well, the reason they have that is because if you're not going to graduate, they'll kick you out of school a month before graduation. So that doesn't do anybody any good.
Well, it does. It does them good. And ultimately, right, from what I hear from the voucher advocates, is this is a pushback to the woke agenda. That they're gonna pursue good Christian values. We're gonna bring the Bible back. We can get rid of that science book, and we can teach good moral values. That seems to be the argument for this, as social media and a lot of moneyed interests are pushing this idea that your local public school is a mess. We've got to do away with it, and we've got to get back to traditional values. And the argument is privatized and profitized schools is that way. Thoughts?
Yeah, well, there was a bill this year that we argued and it ended up passing, which drives me nuts. But it was on making sure the social studies curriculum is it really emphasizing Western civilization. And what was really funny is the two people who stood up on the Republican side, they're really advocate for it and showed like what it means that like they didn't learn the stuff growing up. That they needed to, and it was only later in life that they found out about some of the stuff. Well, you look at, like, it doesn't have Native American history in there. It doesn't have anything like MLK or Tuskegee Airmen or the Tulsa Massacre or the things that are very important in our Black community history. But I wanted to go up and just stand up and ask, well, you guys are complaining that you didn't learn about this. Did you go to an Iowa high school? And neither one of them are originally from Iowa. And there is this right-wing agenda of trying to just, it's they're whitewashing our education system. And it's like the beauty of America is you got to learn from your past and live up to the ideals that this country was founded in. And that's like just whitewashing our past doesn't make everything better. It's not going to end racism. And it's just like so frustrating to see where this state and where this country is going when you know, the freedom to learn is just something that like I took for granted as a kid. But then when I got to college, I was a history major. But what it really taught me was to question what you're learning and to question the authority. And so I've really took to that, being kind of an anti-establishment person. It just, like, to me, that's history.
Right. No, look, I've said from the beginning, I want my kids to be taught actual history, not the soft stuff, which is why back in 2015, you know, when my daughter came home and said, you know, she learned about Rosa Parks, and what she learned is, well, she's tired. You know, she was tired, which was not exactly what the teacher taught her. It's what she got out of it. You know, over that summer, we did a civil rights tour as part of the program, and we went to the places where there was, you know, Black history, and it wasn't good. And, yeah, you know, we didn't sanitize much of it, the really, really ugly stuff since they were kids, we did. But, you know, the reality is I want actual history taught. This stuff was bad. It was horrible. I didn't do it, but you learn about it so you don't allow it to happen again. And I fear by not learning about how bad it was, we can justify away perhaps doing it again in the future.
Right. I mean, the fact that, like, the Florida is banning books on Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
You know, like when it comes to racism in our, the history of America, you know, it's not necessarily our fault what happened, but it's our responsibility to take on, to show, okay, no, this is the direction we're going. We are too good of a nation for this. And it just, like, again, the wrong direction.
Yeah, I want to go back to this guy, you know, starting this voucher school. Because, you know, the part that's interesting to me is these vouchers in your state, as it's been reported, are worth about $7,800 next year. Yeah. Which, you know, sounds like a lot of money. I don't know that in the private school setting it is, because I asked when, you know, years ago, it's probably been 12, 13 years since we had Senator Fulmer on this show, who was the first guy to bring the voucher scheme into Pennsylvania. And he told me that the golden ticket, if my kid got this golden ticket, that they could go to any private school in the state, and the cost would be paid for, the transportation would be paid for, all that. And it's going to be great. But when you read his bill, it was what the school district was paying. And these vouchers, as you have in the state, looks like $7,800. I see this as just another way of enriching the very wealthy and creating these religious-centric schools to destroy public education. This is about destroying more of the commons and privatizing education so that they can get their hands into the till. Am I being hyperbolic? Am I being paranoid?
What's happening in the state? Yeah, no, you're that's exactly what's happening. So the other aspect of it that I don't think it's the light gets shined on it enough is the money doesn't necessarily go to the parents or the student or anything. It goes to a third party corporation, and so they get their cut. And so, and for us, it's when they decided on the bill and as we were debating it, they could not name who that company was. So it's just, we're going to have our faith in some company that we don't know and ends up being out of state. And it just, it makes no sense. It just fiscally, it was the most fiscally irresponsible bill ever to pass in the state of Iowa.
Is it that they didn't know, or they didn't want to tell you?
Well, they didn't want to tell us. They'll say they didn't know, and they trust the system and whatever. It's a scam, and, you know, a lot of people are going to get rich off this, and that's the part that I, like, don't think it's highlighted enough when it comes to this. But, I mean, you talk about this Representative Dean Fisher, and I've worked on him. We worked with him. We were in natural resources together. He had a bill. It ended up not being passed or anything like that, but he had a bill to put bounties on raccoons. So if you killed a raccoon, brought it in, you'd get $5. And, like, just, I mentioned that recently to an event. I spoke at a post-legislative event actually for lunch today. And people started smirking a little bit about that. And I just said, you know, we're just really not bringing our best. And I think that's the number one thing that I realized about being at the state legislature is, like, you know, you look across and, like, what made these people, like, what is it about the state of Iowa that you're like, this is the answer, this is the direction we need to go down? what's happening in the Capitol is so far removed from what the people want and what the people needs are. That's the thing that is bothering me. But it also, where there's crisis, there's opportunity. And I'm looking at across the state, people are fed up. And so I'm hoping the Democratic Party can really get back to its roots, go door knocking, go person to person, town to town, home to home, and just really start getting the message out there and start winning back some of these seats.
So, but what do you say then, you know, because, you know, I've heard this, you know, this voucher thing, this privatization move has to happen because the public schools have just gotten too woke. They're too liberal. The teachers are having cat boxes in the bathroom and teaching, you know, all that stuff to kids. We got to stop that. We got to stop these liberal woke teachers. How do you go into these rural communities like mine and explain to people that, you know, there's not a cat box in every classroom? It's not what you've been fed on the outrage channels that the right controls. It's not the narrative that's being pumped, that they're actually doing the hard work and the good work of educating the next generation of critical thinkers. How do you make that jump then? Because the narrative I find is really, really strong.
Right. I think there's two things. The first thing is, look at who's feeding you that message. It's huge multinational corporations that want your attention and want you upset. And they have every incentive to grab your attention by doing something outrageous and it's not truthful. And again, this gets back to that one corporation, which has ties to Betsy DeVos, already a billionaire, is going to profit off of all of this. And so, like, just follow the money. That's the one side of it. The other side of it is, go to a parent-teacher conference. You know, go talk to your teachers. The teachers are hardworking. The more they're just being demonized right now, we're seeing people doing early retirement just because they're like, I'm tired of this crap. It's just let teachers teach. You know, I don't go into your job and tell you what to do all the time, but like, it's not like they're hiding anything. There's parent-teacher conferences. There's PTAs. We elect school boards to all take care of this. Like, there's a democratic process on our public education. And so it's so frustrating. But again, it gets back to, you're exactly right. That ecosystem that's there is feeding into this. But folks, you got to follow the money.
Yeah, but JD, no, it's not my school. My school's good. My teacher's good. It's all those other ones. You know, the ones I don't know about, the ones that I've never been to, the ones that I've never seen, but I've been told they're bad.
Yep, exactly right.
It's crazy. It's crazy where we are. And there's part of me goes, you know, maybe they're right. I look at all these people who have bought into this stuff. Maybe our education system does need to teach more critical thinking.
Well, here's the thing that we're seeing with, and you're seeing this all across the nation. Republicans are for free speech unless it's some sort of left free speech. They're for freedoms, but then when it comes to like reproductive freedoms, they're not for that freedom. And it's just, they're picking and choosing. And it's not we're for this regardless. It's picking and choosing and really just dissecting what they really want. And it's this one day, it's this another day, it's this another day. And you know,
No, as I always say, they want rights. They want their rights. Right. Just not you to have any rights.
Exactly.
It's about their rights, not yours. So last question I've got, how big of an issue do you think this is across the country? And what should voters think about come November?
I think we had two very in the last 2 years, my 2 years in the legislature, and we were all in the House for re-elections here in November. This, the voucher is one of, like I said, it's the most fiscally irresponsible bill ever passed. So any Republican trying to run on fiscal responsibility that was in the House or the Senate and voted for this bill, they are not fiscally responsible whatsoever. The other thing we had was the AEAs, the area education agencies. Each state's a little different, but this just supplied, it helped with special education. For me, when I was growing up, I had frequent ear infections that caused me to have a speech impediment when I was young. And before I got to school age, I went to an AEA. They got me with a speech therapist that got me to the appropriate age development. That ended up helping me get into school. And they completely dismantled it. And nobody asked for this. And we got thousands on both bills. We got thousands of emails. And with the vouchers, I mean, kids who already go to private schools, there's a few, like the Catholic schools were really for it. And so we got maybe 3 to 5% of our emails were supportive of it. But when it came to the AEA bill, we got over 5,000 this year. Emails, and not one of them were for it. So you look, add that up all together, people are feeling this. And so I think it's a huge deal, and it's a huge opportunity for Democrats to win back seats at the state level here.
No, I'm right there with you. JD, I appreciate the time. Keep up the good work. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Our good friend JD Scholten, Iowa State Representative. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you have these schemes in your neck of the woods? And anybody who has them, who's in favor, I want to hear from you. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1886. That was the day that workers throughout the United States walked off their jobs in a coordinated, planned effort and demanded the 8-hour day. What made this strike truly revolutionary was that the workers were not asking for reduced pay for reduced hours. They wanted their pay level to stay the same. Chicago labor activist Alan Parsons explained this that March for the Chicago Daily News, saying, quote, "The movement to reduce the work hours is intended by its projectors to give a peaceful solution to the difficulties between capitalists and laborers. I have always held that there were two ways to settle this trouble, either by peaceable means or violent methods. Reduced hours, or 8 hours, is the peace offering. Fewer hours mean more pay. Reduced hours is only the measure of economic reform, which consults the interests of the laborers as producers, which can only be acquired by possessing and consuming a larger share of their own project. This would diminish the profits of the exploiters." That first day of May, tens of thousands took to the streets in Chicago, and an estimated 300,000 protested across the nation, marching for the 8-hour day. The strike met with early success. But then, 3 days later, an unknown person threw a bomb at a workers' rally in Chicago's Haymarket Square. The government crackdown against the 8-hour movement was quick and harsh. 8 men stood trial in Chicago for the bombing. 4 were martyred despite a lack of evidence tying them to the bomb. But the idea of the 8-hour day was not so easily crushed. It spread not only in the United States, but across the world. Now, more than a century later, May Day, this day is the International Workers' Holiday. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, this story out of Iowa is just, it's just heartbreaking because, as JD pointed out, Iowa had one of the best education systems in the country several years ago. And now you get these right-wing zealots who are in there who, look, I love the way you put it. You know, we're not sending our best and brightest because, you know, who are these people? Well, they're the folks who could raise the money. They're the people who could get the billionaire backers to help fund them. The Betsy DeVos's, the Jeffrey Yaz's of the world. And it's on this voucher issue. You know, I happened to be talking to someone the other day and I said, you know, look, you know, we could make a ton of money if we just sold our soul on this one issue. You know, this one issue of vouchers, we could get, you know, tons of billionaire money. And they would go, well, yeah, that's not such a good idea. I agree. But the reason I said it is because, look, there's a lot of funding out there. There's a lot of money being thrown around in the churches and a lot of money thrown around in media and a lot of money being thrown into these places that are respected so that you constantly hear the message. The incentive for these different organizations and institutions to be okay and want vouchers is in their radical self-interest. You know, you get these churches go, hey, we could start a religious school. You get these media groups going, hey, you know, there's the charter school people who advertise, and the voucher people, they're, those private schools, they're going to advertise too. You know, nothing drives me crazier than driving down the road hearing an ad on the radio for such and such a school, because I know that's my tax dollars at work, and not in a good way. So when I look at this, I go, you know, the time and repetition that has happened over the last 10 years. I go back to the governor's race. I'm going to say 06. Hardy Williams, a senator from Philadelphia, state senator, got millions of dollars from the charter school people to run on that very issue. And he ran a gubernatorial race. He was never going to win. But it was about pushing that issue. It was about getting that issue out into the media and into people's minds, going, hey, we could have a shiny door new school, you know, and get the same education that the rich people are getting. And you go, no, it's not that. You're not getting that. You're going to get shiny doors and uniforms and strict discipline, but you're going to get creaming, which is, you know, if your kid can't keep up, well, we're going to keep them long enough to get the money and then send them back to the underfunded public school without actually doing anything to make their lives better. Or we're going to push them into cyber charters and all of the craziness that's happened and the criminality that's happened in that world. But it's about the money. And for parents, because you hear this, well, they don't want us parents having choice. And it's not about choice. I don't want the choice between a scheme school and an underfunded school. I don't want the choice between an ideologically driven school that, you know, it's all about the dollars and cents and the cash, and a school that's struggling to keep the lights on or having to share staff. I want one really well-funded, quality, local public school. That's what I want. It's what we had for a while. We did before the Milton Friedmanites decided, no, this segregation stuff, you know, we want it. And if they're not going to give it to us, we're going to do it in education. And this is when all of this push for, you know, vouchers and charters and all of this stuff. Now, look, I'm not against the idea of schools doing things differently. Originally was in favor of the idea of a public charter school that would focus on an issue. We used to call them magnet schools, where, you know, it's an art school. It's a technology school. Some kids learn differently. You know, I like the Montessori method, more experiential learning. We should be doing that, but in the public space, to where we're not putting a profit motive in there. And that's what this does. This goes ahead and gives us a profit motive. And understand, there are people who are lining their pockets. There are people who are going, hey, real estate deals? Yeah, we'll take that public lands, and we'll take everything the community gives us, and we'll privatize it. So in a couple of years when the school fails, we've got all of this stuff. It's bad, start to finish. And this idea that, oh, we're going to help that poor child. Yeah, there aren't a lot of those cases. Are there some? Maybe. But I think we would help a whole lot more if we invested heavily in our local public schools, especially in areas that have the most need. Maybe a funding formula that took poverty into account, and a little bit more would go to those schools. But I know we can't do that because, well, the narrative, those are woke, liberal, failing schools. We need shiny doorknobs and discipline. I got to tell you, it's a frustrating place that we're in. And for me, as I've said, I want a good, well-funded local public school. And this is, I got to tell you, I think this could be a winning issue in the rural communities where the school is the center of that community. Having money taken away and seeing art programs and music and physical activities taken away, I think Democrats, if they do this right, this could be their issue for the next election. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast or go to freespeech.org and find the video. But as always, appreciate you being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at therickssmithshow.com.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.